futuro.
Dear family, welcome to In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela. And it is Friday, and that means only one thing. ITT sound off.
You know, that's how the whole week has been. It's like, oh my God, spring is here. There's like hope in the air. And then it's like, there's a war going on and people being attacked and just worried about the mothers and the children in Palestine. And also everyone in the region just feeling terrified. So our first topic is an update on what's happening there. On Thursday, after 11 days of violence and continued airstrikes from Israel on Gaza, Israel and Hamas announced a ceasefire in Gaza. The real toll, the human toll right now, at least 243 Palestinians, including 66 children, were killed in the airstrikes. On the Israeli side, 12 people were killed, including 2 children. Now, the destruction and the deaths that it took to get to this truce, it's like we saw what was terrifying, right? Israel attacking the Al Jala Tower in Gaza last weekend on purpose. Yeah, the one that houses the media organizations, including the AP and Al Jazeera. And then there was this very disappointing movement on the part of the Biden administration.
Yeah.
Which basically proceeded with a previously approved, yes, I'm about to drop a big number, $735 million. Dollar arms sale to send weapons to Israel. Okay. On Wednesday, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and other House Democrats introduced a resolution to block that sale. Senator Bernie Sanders introduced a similar resolution on Thursday, though both legislations have a slim chance of passing, Julio.
Right. And then this is something that is a theme that we constantly look at when it comes to what has been happening, particularly with media coverage and how it's been framed. So this latest increased violence is always, you know, seen as a, quote, conflict on both sides. But we know the historical context of Israel's occupation in Palestine and control over the freedoms of Palestinians. It's not an equal conflict here, people. I mean, in just 11 days, think about this. Over 90,000 Palestinians in Gaza have been displaced, and that's according to the United Nations. We've also seen this lack of media coverage of this past week's mass protest across the United States. Maria, I found out about them from your Instagram. That's how I found out about these protests.
Can you believe it? I mean, citizen journalists, please. Yes.
Yeah. I still think about that image from Chicago. And I was like, wow, there was a lot of people in Chicago this week protesting. And then there were global protests as well that brought thousands of people to the streets. And then we've seen Republican politicians in the U.S. voice support for Israel and accuse anyone who critiques Israel as being anti-Semitic, which is just, it's just not accurate. That's the problem. It's like, you can, here's my thing, you can be against anti-Semitism and for Palestine in its relationship, because it is an imperial colonial relationship with Israel.
We were having this conversation at home. It's like, we can love the Jewish people, but you hate the Israeli government. You know, we can understand that people hate the American government.
Yeah. So that's really important. So political activists and prison abolitionists, Angela Davis, she's still keeping it real.
Go, Angela.
She broke down this argument during a virtual panel this past Wednesday held by Dream Defenders, which is an organization dedicated to racial justice. And this is what Angela Davis had to say.
Most people who are opposed to racism include anti-Semitism within that. And we are as passionately opposed to anti-Semitism as we are opposed to anti-Black racism. But that opposition also includes passionate opposition to the occupation of Palestine. And if we lose the fear and speak back and speak out, things will change. We have to speak back and recognize that everyone has the right to speak out against governments. We speak out against the government of the U.S. We also have the right to speak out against the government of the state of Israel.
Boom.
Yes.
There it is. There's Angela Davis. I mean, what do you think, Maria, about all
well,
this?
Well, I mean, you know, once the government of Israel went after a building that houses my colleagues as journalists.
Yep.
And I gave a commencement speech, you know, to UC Berkeley,
yeah,
School of Journalism, the day after. I was like, no, we have to call this out. So no, this is not equal. This is not. The history is that this was an unequal, this was an occupation. It was a settler nation.
Yeah.
And the United States is a settler nation.
Yeah, I just want to share one tweet by Lina Al-Safin, who's a producer at Al Jazeera English, who I've known because I used to be at Al Jazeera. And I know of her work. And this is a tweet. PSA to MSM, mainstream media. A ceasefire does not imply a, quote, a return to calm. Palestinians in Gaza will not know what, quote, calm is unless the 14-year blockade is lifted.
Mm-hmm.
Until they can travel to other parts of Palestine freely, until the Israeli occupation is over and justice is achieved.
Exactly.
So that's, I think, what's missing. And just a big shout out, speaking of Al Jazeera colleagues, my good colleague back in the day, Omar Badar.
Mm.
Follow his Twitter as well. He presents it so well as a journalist, especially good in the history and context. So shout out to Omar Badar. All right, let's move on to our second topic, which is talking about media coverage and access. And I'm going to get a little bit insidery Futuro Media, but it's, to me, it's really important. And I'm like, I co-host a show with Mehdi and Hossa. I want to talk about this. This is a platform. So last week, our correspondent in Washington, D.C. for Latino Rebels, his name is Pablo Manriquez, had a temporary credential to cover Congress for us through a Latino lens, and was not given an extension to his press pass. And the executive committee of periodical correspondence, which grants credentials to reporters, told us that due to a ruling, and I think the ruling is still in the books, it's been in the books since the early 70s, Futuro Media, which owns, right, Latino Rebels is part of Futuro Media and is a nonprofit, didn't make enough, had to make 51% of its income through advertising and subscriptions.
Whoa.
So I was like, what the?
So Mad Men.
Yeah. My thing is like, this is 2021. Do you know how many nonprofit media companies and journalism companies are doing the work that they're doing? I'm talking about ProPublica, Reveal, the Texas Tribune. And the fact that this rule, Maria, you say it all the time, 1% of all the money that goes to like nonprofit media companies go to Latino. Like,
it's even less than that. It's 3 pennies out of every dollar goes for media.
All right.
And 1 penny out of every philanthropic dollar goes to a Latino or Latino run organization.
So it's even less. Okay. So we are already in sort of this incredible disadvantage. And what's interesting about this is that this rule was established in the 70s when media was even whiter, even more male, but how much has really changed?
Also, there was a lot of activism in the 1970s. That's why it happened then, because...
Yeah, it made people uncomfortable.
People of color were demanding representation in the 1970s in public media. And
yeah.
So this is deliberate.
Yeah, and I'm trying to get this past, you know, extended, and we're still working, and there's some hope in other parts for us to cover Congress, because I think it's important. We would be the only Latino media outlet that's looking at Congress through a Latino-Latina lens in 2021. And then Pablo, in a month, did amazing work. I mean, covering Puerto Rico, Colombia, the complaints about sexual harassment against janitors. Like, no one's talking about that story in Congress. He was on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really important. You know, this is what this entire issue is all about.
Mm-hmm.
This is straight up what white supremacy in journalism looks like. When you have journalists of color and independent news organizations not being given access to cover this country's government, the halls of Congress,
mm-hmm,
like every day. That's the issue here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's anti-democratic. And it's especially troubling to see such a lack of diversity on this committee. I mean, there were 7 men, 6 of them were white men, and they're determining who gets to cover Congress. And especially after an attempted coup on January 6th that we saw by insurrectionists in the very same building. We're going to fight this, Maria, you know, and you have my back, because I texted you. You're like, go, bro, go. And I'm like, thank you, Futuro Media, because we have a lot of support from journalists who see through this.
The thing is that if you just pull it back and you pull it back really wide, what we are talking about is excellence in journalism. you cannot have excellence in journalism if there is no true representation.
Yeah.
So we can come at this from all kinds of places, but Congress is not allowing that excellence in journalism to be manifested because of this ruling.
Yep.
And we're going to keep on going because
right.
Latinos and Latinas, just saying, represent the second largest voting group in the United States of America. So it is a political issue that we have access to tell these stories. Do you understand? Are you making the connections?
Yep.
Making all the connections. And so there's a desire, as we have seen, to silence these voices.
Right.
That would, I guess, be like the essence of what happened.
Yeah.
In terms of the attempted coup
yeah.
on January 6th of this year.
Yeah.
So on Wednesday, the House voted to approve creating an independent and bipartisan commission that would investigate the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Whoa, only 35 out of 211 Republicans broke from their party to support the bill.
That's crazy.
It's like, okay, just show us who you are.
We see it. That
you don't even want to investigate.
Yeah.
You don't even want to ask the questions.
It's the lines have been drawn. I mean, that's clear.
Oh, this is an assault on democracy, fam. This is what it looks like. Okay. So the bill is expected to move on to the Senate next week. All right. So yes, this is a moment for a little flexing, as my daughter says.
Do it. Flex it.
So I did have a conversation with Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez this Friday morning. It already dropped on Latino USA. It's up. It's up. And very early on, and we talked about this, Julio, actually, you know, now I can actually say this. Very early on, it was clear that Alexandria was still quite traumatized by what happened. I didn't think that that was where we were going to go, but it was pretty traumatizing to hear her talk about the experience. Here's a clip from that interview.
This was an all-out attempted coup. Mike Pence was taken out of the Senate chamber something like 60 seconds before these terrorists and insurrectionists got into the Senate chamber. 60 seconds. And Mike Pence was the one person, arguably, that had one of the most important roles in making sure that procedurally the Electoral College counts went on as proceeded. 60 seconds could have meant potentially the difference between what we have right now in a martial state. And we don't want to acknowledge that that's how close we got, but that is how close we got. We think of coups as something that happens in quote unquote banana republics or in the developing or quote unquote third world. And it happened here. When I talked about how dangerous it was and there was this intense attack back on the right, it was a protection of mythology. And that's what a lot of, I think, the attacks on the right are about. There are certain mythologies that are really important to this idea of American exceptionalism, but there's also certain mythologies that are very important to maintaining white supremacy. White supremacy in and of itself is a mythology, and you have to protect it in order to protect that political power, which has now become a very important base in the Republican Party. And that's why that response was so vociferous, to make it seem that it wasn't as bad as it was. And it was bad. And we were not protected.
Mm. Yeah. You know, Julio, you and I have been through a lot. And just as journalists, you know, we've seen a lot. We've traveled a lot. I talked to you a lot about my reporting. But after this interview, which was really great, actually, to be in the Bronx.
Yeah, with her.
You know, with my crew, with my producer, gracias, Alejandra Salazar, who is our producer at Latino USA, and to Raul Perez, who was recording me. It was just great to be like in a car with my team going up and having this experience. And it was very exciting. And then all of a sudden, Julio, it became incredibly sad. And that night I woke up at 3 a.m. I was so traumatized by seeing Alexandria's traumatized face. I could not get it out of my head.
Yeah.
So thank you for listening to that. And I hope people can take a listen to the piece.
Yeah. All right. Before we end this, we just want to do a quick immigration update. So over to Maria Hinojosa in the immigration update desk.
Well, listen, we are really doing this. Julio, thank you for setting the stage for this, right? We have there's some good news here. Okay. We've covered the medical abuse that happened at the Irwin County Detention Facility in Georgia, where immigrant women were given forced hysterectomies, right? The doctor was collecting their uterus, right? In a recent ITT episode, we talked about reproductive health for women of color, and we got into the history of forced sterilization. So be sure to listen to that so you can understand the context and the history that this is not the first time that women and women of color were forcibly sterilized in the United States. On Thursday, the Biden administration announced that the Irwin County facility would no longer be used to detain immigrants. They also announced that the Department of Homeland Security would end its contract with the Bristol County Sheriff's Office in Massachusetts, which would put an end to immigrant detention at those jail facilities. And, you know, this is so important. Activists, people in their community, they're not superhuman beings. They just became committed to doing something that was a huge challenge, and they made these places be shut down. So that is what democracy looks like for immigrant rights activists who are lovers of democracy and their allies.
There you go.
This is not just about the immigrants, right? This is about all of us. This is about our country.
Yeah, so there it is. Little Friday news. Thank you, Maria Hinojosa from the Immigration Update Desk.
Well, you're welcome, Julio Ricardo Varela. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Okay, all right. A little redundant there. So listen, remember, fam, that our first virtual live ITT show of 2021 is coming up this Wednesday, May 26th at 7 p.m. ET. So check that out. We're going to be talking about racial justice during the week that marks 1 year since the police murder of George Floyd. So for more information and to RSVP, go to bit.ly/ITT Minneapolis. And as always, we're going to put this information in our show notes today as well.
Yes.
Remember, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us. Remember, you can listen to us on Pandora, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts on. Check us out on the web at inthethick.org. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at InTheThickShow.
Yes.
Like us on Facebook and tell your friends and family to listen. In the Thick is produced by Nur Saudi, Harsha Nahata, our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow, Lisa Salinas, and our intern Nicole Basolino, with editorial support from Charlotte Mangin and Nicole Rothwell. Our audio engineering team is Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Thanks to Raul Perez for recording me. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Captain CCK Records. See you on our next episode, dear family. Have a great whatever part of your weekend, end of the week that you're at right now. We love you. Thank you for listening. Ciao.
Take care, everybody. You know, that's like a big rap song. Let me clear my throat.
You know, I realized that my musical knowledge really drops off in the year 1996.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.